This seminar here in Zagreb to all of you. It's the first time that I talk about this, and I'm very, at the outside, very excited and very motivated to give my best. And I request you to be a little attentive while you hear this, because I have tried to prepare something which is important. Today will be an easy entrance into the subject matter, but we will go to more difficult subjects starting from tomorrow. I must say, I have a personal relationship to this subject. Because since coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada, I have been wondering about one thing in his teachings, and something which intrigued me, something where at times had a little doubt, not in him, but whether it would be possible to really live up to what he said. More doubt in the process, maybe, and in myself. And I hope to resolve this, because I feel in a way that my own difficulty with coming to grips with this question is maybe also some of your difficulties. What am I talking about? When you study Srila Prabhupada's lectures, it seems to be very easy to develop Krishna consciousness. I mean, sometimes people would say, what is the difficulty to remember Krishna always? Are you drinking water? Yes, we are drinking water. Then when you drink water, you should think that the taste in that water is Krishna. This is Krishna consciousness. Wow, so I can do that. That's not so difficult. And he would talk many times like this, that it would appear when you would listen to him that Krishna consciousness is the most natural thing, more natural than your own breathing, and it's very easy to attain it. And I do remember Prabhupada was convinced of this. One time, and sometimes he would say, all my disciples are pure devotees, indicating that we had all already reached the level of Krishna consciousness. And I would go, what, is it really so easy? And I mean, is everyone a pure devotee? Am I a pure devotee? No, no. But maybe my brother is, or maybe the temple president is. And I would ask, I remember the temple president, we always had heart to heart discussion, are you a pure devotee? What, me? No. But Prabhupada says all his disciples are pure devotees. But he seems to say that Krishna consciousness is so very, very easy. But is it easy for you? I would say, well, you know, Prabhu, I'm not very pure. And, you know. And as we were discussing late in the night, we found out that there are obstacles on our path, and it's not so easy. So I developed this question, is bhakti at all possible? Then something started. I was asked by Srila Prabhupada to accept disciples, and then the leadership of our movement, the GBC, requested me very strongly, there was no point of saying no, to become a spiritual master. And after some time I thought, well, now maybe it's easy for my disciples to become pure devotees. Let me try. And I remember the first lectures which I gave to you, I thought, well, it's very easy. What's the problem? And then I noticed there were a lot of problems. At least you wrote me in your letters, oh, it's so difficult. And I don't know if it works with me. And you know, and show me some good example. You seem to be always happy, but and so on. I began to face a lot of doubts eventually by those who were taken to the process of Krishna consciousness. They doubted in the process, and they also doubted in themselves. And some of my disciples would come to me and say, Guru Maharaj, this doesn't work. You know, people give their promises at the initiation fire, but you know that I know that they won't keep it after 10 years. And I would be overwhelmed with an avalanche of doubt. And in my right ear, when I put on the lecture of Prabhupada, Krishna consciousness is so easy, even a child can take to it, even a dog, you know, can dance in pure bhakti. And I would go, wow, maybe. And I would try to see it like Prabhupada, and then again I would go and do Java retreats all over the world. And I, you know what I found out? That was almost a revelation. I thought the devotees who would come to the Java retreats wanted to learn how to chant 64 rounds without every day. I thought that was their goal. But do you know what I found out? They wanted to find a way how they could complete their 16 rounds, because many of them were not chanting their 16 rounds each day. So there was a difficulty. It was not very easy for them. They came to learn how it could work for them. So as I was growing old, I'm only 60 years young. as I was spending more and more time in our movement, in my left ear I heard my spiritual master saying it's very easy. In my right ear I heard his disciples and the congregation saying it's very difficult. And you know, it's difficult when you get two types of information in the ear. You need to find out, is it possible? Is it easy? And in this in this class, or the series of classes, I was actually forced to find out what is the secret of Krishna consciousness and how will it work for a devotee. Then I had a contact with one devotee. His name is Adi Purusha Prabhu. He is one of the teachers of the Vrindavan Institute for Education. And I remember we used to discuss about this. And he, a few years ago, came up with a model which he called the Three Hearts of Bhakti, which was a formula which made it, in fact, very easy for everyone to practice Krishna consciousness. But I maintained my philosophical reservation. You can say many things, and I know you are a teacher, but I need to be convinced of this. And then I began to do two things. I again studied the Nectar of Devotion very deeply, and I also applied in my life a simple formula which tells you three things you should do and two understandings which you need to have in your mind, and then it worked. And I did it, and my whole life did change. I'm actually now very happy in my Krishna consciousness. Since I discovered this, I was always I'm a person who cannot tolerate low emotional energies in his own life, or negativity. I'm just not. I don't feel comfortable in being mental. Therefore, I always thought of ways to live on high energy. Since I'm applying this, I feel it's no longer necessary to develop, to have high energy techniques or how to raise yourself to a high state. No, I feel it's very, very, very possible to be in Krishna consciousness no matter what. And therefore, I would like to share this to you during this festival which we have put up. There will be a session this evening. It will be a relatively short session. And then there will be tomorrow a session and hopefully two other sessions. Now, before I start, I need to ask you, do you have enough oxygen? Not really. So, Nalini Gopi, you will be our oxygen lady. I will speak in German. Du musst einfach von Zeit zu Zeit das unbequem weit öffnen, das Fenster. Da werden Leute protestieren und sagen, nein, dann musst du ihnen einen Sitzplatz in der Wärme zeigen. So, who is our oxygen man there, or woman there? Is someone open the window? I'm
here.
Who? Yeah. Jagannath Mishra. Where are you, Jagannath Mishra? Can you be in charge of the oxygen? That is Krishna, actually. But from time to time, you have to open the window, and naturally, devotees who stand next to the devotee, to the window, will protest severely, forgetting that there are other people in the room except for them, and that you can show them a nice place where it's warm, and so on. But you must be very emphatic that the devotees don't want to, but the rest of us need, because I can see already some of my listeners coming into the low energy mood because of the lack of oxygen. If I would do a seminar, I would now make exercises with you, but I don't do this because then I will be criticized. It's not necessary in the temple. Krishna. But I have an idea how I will wake you up. Faster. Let me ask you a question. Who of you is practicing Krishna consciousness for more than 10 years? Raise your hands. Who is practicing Krishna consciousness for more than 5 years? That should be more, I think. Prabhu Dinse, wake up. Now, on my next question, I expect more hands to rise in case you are not yet tuned in. Who is practicing Krishna consciousness for more than 2 years? No, that should be everyone, you know. Who is practicing Krishna consciousness for more than 1 year? You will see it is an important question. Who is practicing Krishna consciousness for more than half a year? Less again. It must be more. Prabhupada said when we practice Krishna consciousness, we will experience ecstasy, we will experience steadiness, we will experience love of Godhead. Are you experiencing these things? Who's experiencing?
Yeah.
Only the new people, right? I have done this experiment with many devotees. When I ask the older devotees who are longer than 10 years in the movement, are you experiencing love and ecstasy? They will go. And the new people, they will say, yes. No, and they are serious. And when you read their faces, they are very happy and inspired and enthusiastic. Why? I will give an answer to this question a little later. My dear devotees, but all of you who are not so new, who are a little older, I request you today to ask yourself an uncomfortable question. Our founder Acharya says this process is very easy. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, says, Susukam Kartum Avyayam. This means it is performed with great happiness, this process. So we have authoritative statements from our founder Acharya and most important guru and the Supreme Personality of Godhead in it, indicating that this is an easy process. Why do only the greenhorns, it means the people who are very young in the movement, feel it is like this? Why are you not feeling like this? When there is a journey, when you do a journey, and it is said on the journey, you will reach, let us say it's a journey with a car or a journey with a train, that's easier. You will reach Stuttgart, you will reach Munich, then you will reach Stuttgart, then you will come to Karlsruhe, to Heidelberg, Frankfurt, and Hamburg. So when you find this in your ticket, you will pass over these stations, and you go, and you go on a train, and next, and after some time, you look, and well, there's a Sarajevo, then Beograd, Nish, Skopje, Athens. I'm not coming to Stuttgart, and I'm not going to Munich, not to Pforzheim and Heidelberg and Hamburg. I must be in the wrong train. So when the founder Acharya and Krishna gives you a route for your spiritual life, from Shraddha, you go to Bhajana Kriya, then you come to Nishtha, then you come to what is Ruchi, Ashakti, Bhava, and Prema. And these signs don't show up in your life. You must be on the wrong route. Or you were cheated when you got your tickets. So when we practice Krishna consciousness, we should all experience the different levels which are explained in the scriptures, which are explained by the acharyas. If we don't experience them, there must be something wrong, something which is not right. Either in the statements of the Acharya or God, or in our own application. Now, usually, when we talk about these subject matters and come to classes, we will hear by the lecturers that the reason why we are not yet experiencing the promises of Krishna consciousness is because our hearts are impure still, and this is so because we have committed aparadhas somewhere on the way, which has covered the result from coming. But in this class, I will take another in the seminar. I believe there is value to this explanation, but I don't think it is the whole truth. Because I know from the lives of the devotees whom I know, I guide them, I know also from many serious devotees with whom I talk, that they are very serious. They are not egoistic people who want to harm others or want to harm Krishna and commit offenses. This is not their intention. But what I see is that maybe they have not totally understood the secrets of bhakti, as bhakti being the way and bhakti being the goal. And in this seminar, I would love to talk about these secrets on the basis of our scriptures and explain that when we have Krishna, when we talk about Krishna consciousness, there are actually two things we talk about, not one thing. We talk about something which is the right process, that is how to execute bhakti and the processes of bhakti. And then we talk about the goal, that is ecstatic love of Godhead, bhakti as being bhavana. A bhavana means, can mean a state of being, or it can be like bhakti bhava, a certain mode of ecstatic love of Godhead. Bhava is a state. In our we have one acharya who spoke about the secrets of bhakti. His name is Rupa Goswami. He is actually very able to talk about bhakti because he is in the spiritual world Rupa Manjari, eternal associate of Radha and Krishna. And here in the word, he's an ascetic monk who has written on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the guidelines of bhakti in his bhakti shastras. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Rupa Goswami the precise order to compile a guidebook in bhakti and empower all the devotees who would come after Gauranga Mahaprabhu to practice bhakti. Rupa Goswami was incredible as a devotee. He was on the highest states of Krishna consciousness. But he and his brother, they were just so kind-hearted that they would be known as the fathers of Vrindavan. Sanatan Goswami, brother of Rupa Goswami, would be asked by all the villagers to guide them in practical affairs. For instance, when they would quarrel, you know, let us say, I know of one thing, there was a mango tree which grew on the property of one farmer, and it had mangoes which were, you know, the branch was going like this to the property of the other farmer, and then the mango fell down, and the question was, whose mango is it? Is it the mango of the landowner, or is it the mango of the tree owner? And the Goswamis would solve these delicate questions, and they were accepted as the ultimate authority. They had, in other words, a grasp of the human reality. They were both the most exalted devotees, but also they knew how to deal with people on a very human level and on a very human way. My own spiritual master would like Rupa Goswami very much. He said once that he was not sure if he could spread Krishna consciousness in the Western world, because Westerners are just different from people who were born in a culture which had Vedic influences in India. Huh? So once, when Prabhupada was residing in Radha Damodar, he actually saw Rupa Goswami coming from his bhajan kutiya, dressed just in a little loincloth, and just coming out, and said, "Oh, Swamiji, you should go in the West, and you should know I will come with you and I will help you." And after Prabhupada had this experience of Rupa Goswami coming to him and assuring him of help in his spiritual in his endeavor to spread Krishna consciousness, he felt encouraged to go to the West. Now what I want to say with this example is that Rupa Goswami's teachings are not only for those who live 500 years, who lived 500 years ago. No, Rupa Goswami gave teachings and helped Prabhupada so that we in the West would also profit. And he is a universalist, in other words. So he gave a definition of bhakti. And I would like to tell you this definition, but I see many of you are tired and are really feeling as if they're tortured. At least you look like that. And I don't know what to do with you. I also try to be a human. Should I tell jokes maybe for some time, or is it all right? I want to preach in New York where people can understand English and listen. But when I'm in New York, I want to go to the Belkanes. You need to listen a little bit more intensely. It's not a torture. It will be good for you to understand this. Try and make an effort. This definition is here. Anya vilashita shunyam. Janakama janavritam. Anukulyena Krishnanu.
Anukulyena Krishnanu.
Silanam bhakti uttama. I will read to you the translation and then a more freer translation. This is from Srila Prabhupada. When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monastic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So, let us make it a little bit more simple, or a little bit more easy to work with. In other words, what Rupa Goswami calls bhakti uttama, or first class devotional service, or in other words, pure devotional service, is an activity which is intended to please Krishna without any ulterior motive. And this activity is not covered by philosophical or karmic interests it pursues. And to make it more simple, I want to give you an example. Yesterday I was a guest of a devotee, and this devotee tried to cook, has cooked for me. The devotee likes very much lasagna, but had heard that I take an Ayurvedic diet only, and lasagna is a no-no on the Ayurvedic. I will talk very simple, as you see. But this devotee thought, let me cook what pleases my guest. This was an activity with the intent to please the guest. The devotee liked lasagna and pizza and all the things which make you a little lady. But the devotee thought, no, this meal is not for me. It is for my guest. My guest doesn't like lasagna and pizza, but dal and all the good things of life. Dal, vegetable, these natural preparations, and was sacrificing his interest in to please the person. So this is the devotee was not speculating. Oh, maybe he should eat lasagna or pizza, and all these things which make him fat and unhealthy. He was really concentrating. No, this is what pleases my guest, and he had no ulterior motive. Sometimes cooks cook what they like. They're very happy when the guest doesn't eat it, because then they can eat it. This would be an ulterior motive in the cooking. I'm trying to give a modern example for modern people who can understand things in a modern way. So let us now again go back to philosophy. Enough of fleshy examples. We want to see. Uttama Bhakti is described as an activity where the intention is to please Krishna. And you are not speculating, and you don't have an ulterior motive in this. This verse of Rupa Goswami applies to two types of devotees. Devotees who are practicing bhakti as a path at the process, who are on the way, and it applies also to devotees who have attained bhakti as a goal. They have reached the perfection. That is, even a beginner can start to practice devotional service, pure devotional service, by concentrating on, I do this activity for Krishna. I engage my body, my mind, and my verse in this activity. And I do it with a with favorable intention to give Krishna pleasure. When a devotee can do this, he's practicing bhakti uttama. Now, the uttama adhikari, that means a devotee with the highest qualification, he will practice this all the time without interruption. He will not fail. Everything which he does is practicing this this type of cooking or this type of process every day. He doesn't have to make an effort. He's always living in the question, what serves Krishna? It would be like as if this devotee thinks, oh, I want that my guest is so happy with me. I want that he stays in my house, and I want to cook every day for him like this, without a motive to eat what I like to eat. I will just only sacrifice my life for him. There's a very high stake, which in our example would characterize the person who has attained bhakti as a goal. But this devotee who received a guest, I'm just giving it as an example, has for one day been able to stay in that consciousness, or it was maybe 2 hours, I don't know how long it takes to cook a meal, maybe 3 hours. And therefore, it was a very high performance. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur have said that Krishna consciousness is different from all religions in that the way to reach the goal and the goal are identical. They are pure. They are untouched by material energy. The way is something which an imperfect person does. He's still on the way, and if he keeps this path, stays on this path, he will be on the path of purity. And the goal is someone like Prabhupada has attained. And in order to explain this very difficult concept, the acharyas have given us an example, and I believe if you listen to the example, you will easily understand what is in their mind. They gave the example of a beggar who had never seen gold and came to the king and said, King Ji, can you show me gold? The king said, after thinking a little while, if the beggar was trustworthy, yes. You take this stepnitsa or staircase, you take the staircase, and then when you go, you reach another floor, another level. And there you open the first door, and there's my royal treasury, and you will see everything there is gold, the vases, the coins, the boxes, and so on. So the beggar did as he was told. He walked up the steps of the staircase, and as he was walking from time to time he wondered, this is a special, this is very amazing. But he didn't pay much attention to the staircase. After all, he wanted to see the treasury. So he reached another level, the first story. He opened the first door, and when he opened it, he saw everything was made out of gold. But as he saw the royal treasury, he looked, some idea came in his mind, and he looked back to the staircase, and lo and behold, he saw the staircase is also made of gold. This is an example which shows us when we go through the process of Krishna consciousness and we do it properly. I want to say to you properly, because I feel you're not doing it properly. If you remain on the golden staircase, not somewhere else, not in another road, and you go, you come to another level, and you see the gold, and then you look back and you say, my God, this was, I didn't recognize where I walked. Sometimes someone who walks a golden staircase will go, aha, woo. And this happens sometimes to a new devotee. I was talking to one devotee today, and the devotee, I asked him, how are you? And he says, I'm very blissful, Maharaj. What? Yes, I'm very blissful because I've given my life in Krishna's hands. I'm no longer making plans. I'm just accepting everything as Krishna's mercy, and a new dimension has opened. I really like this process of Krishna consciousness. God, he is a brother. Let's sit down and talk about our experiences. And he told me that for a long time he had been practicing Krishna consciousness with an really not for Krishna, but he wanted to get something out of it, some happiness of his mind, some solution of his life's problems. And he noticed he was not feeling the bliss of Krishna consciousness, but when he let loose of this expectation and finally just did service to please Krishna the way Krishna wants it, he felt blissful, and now he is a bliss candidate. And this devotee is not a naive devotee. He's a devotee who's trained in psychology. He makes good money. He's well situated in life, has fulfilling partnerships. But he found the little key to do something for Krishna. Bhakti is for Krishna. It is an active engagement, including body, mind, and words. And it is done with the intention to please oneself. It is correct. Oh, God. 10 people said, no, it's not correct. It's done, let me say it again. It's done with the intention to please Krishna. Why did you say Hari Bol? Are you doing this? This is very serious. That devotee had practiced Krishna consciousness for 30 years, and he only now he had made the correction in his life and saw the results were coming. The key is not to just act. No, you must do it with the intent to please Krishna, or in a favor. You must have this loving intention. I would like to give you the example of the Goswamis. Kamsa, did you know, pleased Krishna very much? No, I'm serious. He gave him a good fight. And Krishna liked to fight. In fact, he came from his divine abode to have some, it's called Vira Rasa, Ananda Gopal. Vira Rasa means heroic rasa. In the Bhagavatam, you find fighters delight when they have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. We can't believe, you know, you all see the posters of the ultimate fight. you think, wow, how poor these people are, one of them will be trashed up. But he likes it because he's a fighter. It's a certain rasa which non-fighters don't know. So Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Sindhu. He is the ocean of all rasas, and he likes a good fight, but he cannot have it in the material world, in this virtual world, because everyone serves him there. So finally, Kamsa was there. He's one of the two, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. He's a guard of the kingdom of God, and he, by some arrangement, I won't tell the arrangement now, came to the material world and wanted to fight with Krishna, but really fight. He wanted to go to live for the ultimate fight, life or death. And Krishna was so pleased. He smiled. But did Kamsa do bhakti?
No.
Why not? He believed in Krishna.
Yes.
He acted in a way which pleased Krishna.
Intention.
Oh, someone has listened to this lecture. The intention was there to hurt Krishna. He acted with his body, with his mind, and with his words. He did everything. Paka. Only one thing was missing. The intention to serve Krishna. I would like to give another example. A pot. How do we say pot in the sweet Croatian language?
Lonas.
A monas? Lonas. I thought it was a monarch. A monarch is a monk. But it's a lonas, not a monarch. Yeah. So it's a lonas. The lonas, see. The pot. From the pot comes very nice rasagulas. Very nice preparations. But does the pot perform bhakti? Has the pot in the kitchen from which the nice sweet pots came for the deities performed an active process of bhakti? No, there is no intention. The pot is a dead thing. It didn't have this one point. The intention at the outside said. So you want to do bhakti, in case you want to do this, and I think everyone wants to do it here. You need to learn what bhakti is. It's for Krishna, Sakrishnum. It is done with the mind, the body, and the words, and then there is the intention. This is for Krishna. It is not for me. Everything is in truth their property, says the son of Kumar Samhita. Everything is meant for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. I was last year giving you a birthday present. It was the book Broken Names. It was the first draft. Later came another copy with more chapters. But the name, Nikunja Rasa and Viparkit, her husband, have arranged that this is translated into Russian. And it was very nice. They said, Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, the name Broken Names, when we translate it in Russian, doesn't really sound well. Can we give it another title? And we thought about it. And then they came out with a solution which was so beautiful. They gave it a title which, if you translate it back in English, means empty names. Empty. Nothing is empty. How do we say empty? Yes. Empty names. And it's very interesting that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses the same word in relationship to the most important process of bhakti. He uses it in relationship to chanting the holy name. You can do it, but it can be empty. And this is the example which he gives. he says, the holy name, which is must be chanted not lip deep, but heart deep. It must be done with the intention to please Krishna. This spirit must be there. Otherwise, the names which you chant are empty. Nothing there, no substance. He gave an example of a medical capsule. Only when it carries the medicine is it full and effective. If it does not carry the medicine, or if it carries a wrong medicine, like Siyan Kali or something, it is counterproductive. But chanting the holy name or doing any other process of bhakti cannot be done empty in order to be effective. You understand this example? Just like a medical capsule must carry the active ingredient that means the medicine. So when you do your activity, it can't be an empty, mindless, automatic activity. You must have the desire to please Krishna. That must be your intention. There are two qualities of Krishna which you must know when you want to perform bhakti. One is Prabhupada talks about this as point 39. Krishna loves his devotee. And the second is quality number 40. He is controlled by the love of his devotee. Krishna is a person, in other words. When you do something for a person, he wants to see that you do this to please him. If he does this just without anything, you are not inclined to you. There's no rasa. Imagine you come to someone and he throws before your nose a plate with spaghetti. You will say, I'm not a dog. You can do this for your dog. You just throw this. I will eat somewhere else. Krishna is exactly like that. He wants that the devotees offer something with love. He's not, anyways, not interested in the material ingredient. He's interested in the love of his devotee, not in the spaghettis which you put. He gets better food than spaghettis. You know, he's interested in this. Prabhupada says about how Krishna loves his devotee. It is said of Krishna's devotees that if they offer little water or a tulasi leaf in devotion to Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu is so kind that he will sell himself to them. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says even Krishna requests his devotees, please offer me, can you help me? Fruit, a leaf, and a flower, and water, and offer this with love, bhakti. He says this two times. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, when the devotee offers this with love, Krishna is so excited about love that sometimes he gets so bewildered that he eats also the flower, not just the fruit and the water and the tulsi leaf, but he is appreciating the love that he eats the flower because he's interested in the love. That's Krishna. And when he sees in the process of bhakti that a devotee offers this sakrish for Krishna, it's the devotee's attitude of love and affection for Krishna that makes him obliged. He feels obliged. I want to say, many years ago, we had Serbian summer camps and we always had small theater plays. And I think Kishori and Madhava developed one theater play. We gave the devotees three items: a robe, milk, and a chair. Now, they had to make a theater play out of these three things. So they made such a beautiful theater play. There was a man who was very depressed, a non-devotee, in his Belgrade apartment. And he was very depressed. Now next to him, there was one innocent devotee who had a Gopal deity, and he offered the deity every day a fruit, some water, and sometimes milk. Now, one day, the depression of that Belgrade man became so intense that he decided to take his life. He took went on a chair, you know, put the rope on the somewhere on the ceiling and pulled around the neck. Now, as he was just about to kick the chair and end his life, he heard a ring on his bell, and he said, "Oh my God, what is happening?" And he went down, he took the rope down, he went down from the chair, he opened the door, and there was this devotee. And the devotee said, "I'm sorry to disturb." The devotee didn't know about what was happening. He had just drank. I have my Gopal deity, and I don't have any fruits or anything at home, and I need to offer him something. He's a child. Do you have a little milk? Okay, just go into my refrigerator. There is a little milk. I don't need it any longer. And the devotee said, "Oh, thank you. You saved Gopal today. You can take this milk, and you can take everything." "I know, I only take it." "No, take everything." So the devotee took the milk. He's funny today. And he went out of the apartment. The man closed the door and went back to his project. He went back on the Stolitsa. He got the rope, you know, and it was in the theater you never show death, but you all of a sudden the light went out, and you heard the chair, and you knew that he did it. You know, he followed the path of depression. Now, as you heard the chair falling down, the light goes on, and he's there kneeling on the ground, and Krishna is before him and said, "Thank you for the milk. You gave me the milk, and you promised to give more. I will give you birth now as a devotee life, where you can give more service for me." And the theater play ended. Beautiful theater play, no? This is how Krishna is. When someone does something, even if in bad consciousness, I mean, he was not in high emotional energy, this great man, then Krishna does accept it, because, as Prabhupada said, he becomes obliged. We heard the day before yesterday about Sudama Vibra, who brought just a little broken rice, and Krishna became so obliged by that gift, which was given really with a conscious way to please Krishna. He brought this as a present for Krishna and carried this all the way, that Krishna felt, I have nothing in my possession which I can give to this devotee. But he gave him a big canvas. Krishna thought it's insignificant. So, let us summarize and then do a practice. Just to get ready. Bhakti can be seen as a way. If the way, in the beginning, I wrote this down, it's a little complicated. When bhakti is referring to devotees who are in practice, it means that they apply, listen, the proper process. In other words, they do the right thing. When bhakti is applied to devotees who have reached perfection, it means that they do the proper process properly. They do it right all the time. And what makes bhakti right are the Swarup Lakshana and Tatastha Lakshana, which we will hear tomorrow about, you know. But for us here who are just approaching the subject matter, I want to say, if you can do the three things for whatever short time you can do it, you're practicing Uttama Bhakti. How to make it more perfect, we will learn a little later tomorrow. But for now, it is, you need to know I'm doing something. It's for Krishna, and I'm using my body, my mind, and my words for Him with the intention to give Him pleasure. This is the way. When you have reached the goal, you will have few more other things there. About what we, these few other things, these two other things which will be with you, we will hear that tomorrow. I am a lover of the Bhagavatam, and I want to tell you my most favorite text from the Bhagavatam up to now. Are you interested?
Yes.
Funny. Listen to this. It's so encouraging, because if you hear about bhakti as the way, it will tell us about the way. You are encouraged. If you hear about it as a goal, you are discouraged, because you are not yet there. Because you will also be able to do it. The verse is from the 12th chapter of the 10th canto. It says, it talks about Agasura, who was forcibly bringing, forcibly Krishna was coming into his body, and he was liberated from material existence. It says, if even only once one brings Krishna into his mind, if even only once, or even by force, one brings the form of the personality of Godhead into one's mind, one can attain the supreme salvation by the mercy of Krishna, as did Agasura. You know, if only for a short time you can get it just right, I'm doing something for the pleasure of Krishna, then it's good. What then is to be said of those whose hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters when He appears as an incarnation, like for instance, we heard about Varahadev this morning, or those who always think of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the source of transcendental bliss for all living entities and by whom all illusion is completely removed. It's a Kamutika Naya. In order to understand it, you need to understand what is the Kamutika Naya. That's a certain form of logical statement. If already this is true, how much more is it true when it is applied to this case? In other words, if it is already true that Agasura, who was so low class and who actually didn't intend to please Krishna, when Krishna came in his mind, he already was liberated. How much more is to be expected by someone who, as a devotee, brings Krishna into his mind by thinking of him? That's the logic. You have to understand this with this type of logic. Already this demon got this. How much more will happen if a devotee now brings Krishna into his mind? And at the end, I will tell you a story which I heard while I was in Kat. There were once four drunkards who were drinking heavy alcohol, and they became very, very excited. It was near to a temple, and they got some light out of the temple, and they put the light up on a pillar Yeah. And then they began to dance around the light, you know, with flapping some cloth and saying, I'm a peacock. And the other said, I'm a cuckoo. And the other said, I'm a sparrow. And they just fooled around. But they did this at the month of Kartik, when it said you should light a light and just offer it to the Lord. They put the light where the temple was, you know. So if they, who were just so out of their mind, got, and so the next, then after some time, each one died, you know, natural death. And, but they were all, I forgot, either they were born as Brahmanas or they were liberated or some high result came to them because of this practice. So if already a slight contact has such good effects in the next life, how much more will the practice bring to you when you do it consciously, when you come in the month of Kartik and you offer your light to Lord Damodar every night, how much more you get benefit. This is the logic. Consciously. So I want to wake you up. And chant with you in Uttama Bhakti, first class Bhakti. First of all, sit down. You're sitting already. You know, sit comfortably. I would like you now to apply what you have heard. We talk a little later, 5 minutes, then we talk like anything, but now we are silent. Practice. I would just like you to reflect about the fact that you are sitting with so many nice devotees in the Zagreb temple. You came to a festival and your desire and your hope is to somehow get some more inspiration in your Krishna consciousness. I would like you now to enter a practice where you add the missing element, where you put the medicine in the capsula, where you end the empty names and have chant full names. I would like you to set your intention. Krishna, I'm your part and parcel. We have a connection. I'm not always conscious about this connection, but deep in my heart, I just know that I will only be satisfied in a relationship with you. I will now chant with these devotees in order to please you, to give you pleasure, to satisfy your ears. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Krishna Hare Hare
Thank you.
This was a very simple class. And my purpose in this class was to describe to you the proper process. But tomorrow we will learn how to do the proper process properly. We need to still add one thing, but we will go step by step. And I believe the great discovery in this class was to do something with the intention to please Krishna. In Rupa Goswami's definition of what is bhakti, this is described as anukulyena. Anu means to follow. Cool. Cool is something which is not cool. Not too cool. It's so cool, Maharaj. But really, with the desire to do something favorable for Krishna, to please him. Remember, Kamsa did all the things, fighting, but he didn't have that intention. And I believe young devotees are often so blissful because somehow they have understood in their lives there is a God and I'm now his and I'm serving him. It's all about that. But somehow on the road to heaven, or while they practice, they become mechanic practices, and they other things are important for them, you know, how to situate themselves and you know how to reach missionary goals, to get some recognition by the others. I know in Russia there's so many who just want to have a name and then run, you know, spiritual names. We get other goals as we are moving through life. And so on. But if you do the proper process, there will be an immediate result. But there's something more we need to learn, and that is coming tomorrow, where we learn to do the process properly. But at least when we have to be on the right road, then we can learn to drive very nicely. But first, let us get on the right road. That is my point in this first lecture. Now, if we go on the wrong road or wrong train track, and we don't come to, in my example, to Frankfurt and Hamburg, but we come to, I mean, this Belgrade is very nice also, but in the example, we come to Nish somewhere, you know, that something is not correct. You're on the right, I'm not on the right track. You will see, tomorrow will be a little tough. We will have to really... Tomorrow, your intelligence will be a little challenged, but I do know that you can do it. It's not too difficult. And we will make it very simple in the end. But you need to sleep well. You need to be well rested, full of oxygen, and full of readiness to learn. It's a little different than a lecture where you hear more or less the same things in a different constellation. It's actually devotional training we will do. Training, teaching, school class, bhakti school class, ashram teaching. And so tomorrow I need awake students. You will do it. You went excellent today. I was just sometimes at talk. No, we got to be okay. That's natural. We have to be a little personal. All right. I also would love you to give you a little homework. You can do what you have heard throughout the festival and see if maybe the festival turns out different for you than other festivals. You can just see. Let me be in the festival and let me see if I can please. Yeah, I will have the intent to please Krishna and his devotees. You know, when we think of Krishna, we think of his devotees also. Try to have this conscious idea. I'm here to please the Krishna and his devotees. Try to apply it. If you don't apply it, it won't, you know, it won't be so clear. But if you apply it, it will become crystal clear to you. Hmm? could see when you were now chanting and you had this idea, oh, I have to somehow sing for Krishna. What an interesting concept. You know, and you guys, there was some, I mean, I made a mistake in singing, but there was, you were doing very well, very well. Let me watch the wrist watch now. No, we have time for one question. It's not so late. I thought we were already 10 o'clock. Oh, one or two questions. Who has a question? Govindanathan has a question. And Govinda has a question. Two questions we can take. Tomorrow is another day. But we want to not end very quickly. Rezi.
If you see in Bhagavad Gita, it's twice, we hear twice the words on Manabhava, which shows the supreme dharma. Let us say, and there are other two verses also that speak about how one should perform his duty. They are also twice in Bhagavad Gita. So in modern times, duty is not so well accepted. Like nobody wants to do the duty. Everyone wants to be like independent or something. And it seems that now we have situation where people want to do what they want, and for them duty is wonderful. And for those who want love Krishna, duty seems like it's not so important. So my question is how to understand this relation between duty and love.
Is there a relationship to the class which I don't see as of yet?
Because probably most of us, and myself, sometimes I chant out of duty, not out of service to Krishna like this.
Thank you.
And it feels like it's not let us say right. It's not the way. And at the same time, it is said it's good if you follow at least a duty, and not act whimsically, stop chanting or do something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes we do things out of duty, and when we do things of duty, we think more of ourselves. You know, I promise that I have to do my duty and so on. There is not a time to think of Krishna. See, the purpose of my class was really to touch on, let's get it first right, what is bhakti? Let's go to Rupa Goswami. And then we can talk about all the other problems which appear, like what the problem which you have expressed now very nicely. But sometimes in life you need to go get back to what is the New York word? Get back to basics, isn't it? Get back to basics, man. You know, you have to get it right. And I feel sometimes devotees are not on the right road, therefore don't get results. So even if you are like you have, now I will come to your question. Even if you are like this, that you do it out of duty, then when you go on the right road, everything changes. I want to tell you an example. Yesterday I was somehow very tired because I worked so hard in Germany. Yesterday I took... No, the day before yesterday I was tired like a stone. And I slept here. But you know, when you sleep a lot, you get even more tamago and more tired. So then the next morning, I had to chant my rounds. And I only have this morning time. If I don't get it then, there's so much service during the day. So I sat there and I just chanted out of duty. Like, okay, I'm supposed to give first initiation. I better chant now my rounds, you know, do my duty. And for me, it is very, I need to feel life in, I need to feel alive in what I do. I notice, oh,
what a drag is going on. This isn't so. And then I thought, I'm getting this secret hidden, the hidden secrets of bhakti. Something is not right here. And then I understood. So I said, let's go to the basics. Let's go to the basics. What is bhakti? What is this process which I'm initiated in? Okay, I should do it for Krishna. Okay, this is chanting. Okay, and then I had a big picture of Krishna. I have a wonderful apartment with a picture of Krishna. His face is 1.20 meters big. You have to visit this apartment and see this picture. It's really good. So I was chanting. Oh yeah, oh, it's for you, for Krishna. It's not that I get it done with. good. And now I should please Krishna. What pleases Krishna? Oh, I should chant with devotion. He says in the Gita, with bhakti. So, at the moment I have no bhakti in my heart, but let me read some song about Nityananda, and let me get some, you know, these Vaishnava Acharya songs have so much bhakti that maybe something will come. Then I tried again after this. And yes, I still did it maybe out of duty, but I was at least on the proper road. And I just didn't stop. I chanted many more rounds than 16 rounds yesterday, because I felt just so ecstatic in Krishna consciousness. But before, I felt bored. And those who live with me know, when I'm bored, I'm really bored. I have this problem. It needs to be interesting for me. Otherwise, I just switch off. I'm not like Mr. Duty about it. It doesn't work with me. I'm too different. And I ran away from school when it was bored. I didn't stay one second the moment it was bored. You can't catch me with duty. But when it is, of course, now I do my duty also sometimes. I'm not so bad, don't worry. But I'm just saying, in devotion service, when I see it gets dry, which it often does, then I know I'm on the wrong road here. I'm on the road. This road doesn't work. It's the wrong road. And I correct it as soon as I become aware. And it always works. That's why I quote Nectar of Devotion, where you say, we have a loving God. He's not like, oh, you know, if you do it wrong, I just don't love you, you know. If he sees that you are trying, he Prabhupada says he feels obliged. Krishna feels. Even in the Bhagavatam, it said that the Lord feels when one chants his name. This person is chanting my name. It is my duty to protect him. He feels like this. He's a loving God. He's not a judgmental God. He even has no place in his heart for the faults of the devotees. When he looks at you, he's not interested in your mistakes. But you must be on the right road. So therefore, I'm teaching this very mechanically. 3 points. Who remembers 3 points? It is for who?
Krishna.
What does it? One devotee said, and devotees. Who was it? Dharma. Krishna means with his expansions and also with the devotees. But don't make bhakti just a social movement, but you do it for the devotees, seeing them a part of Krishna very dear, not just to bribe them, make them your friend, that they give you a pizza when you don't have one, you know, not like Croatian friendship, you know. I like Croatian. Material friendship. Croatians are the best people in the universe. I'm not saying that material friendship, that's what I wanted to say. What is it? It's an activity done, body, mind, and words. And the third point, what is going on in your mind as you do this?
Motivation.
The motivation you want to please Krishna. Now I know it is so simple that some of you think, is this the hidden secret of bhakti? It's the first part of the hidden secret of bhakti. And we will go further, but we need to step on the right road. And this is what, you know, as a disciple of Prabhupada who listens, who was trained by Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada would always tell us, do it for Krishna. Krishna is a person. Do it as good as possible. Try to please him. He would really make this a point. And I'm thinking, oh, can we please Krishna? I mean, we are very far away. But Prabhupada would say, he would sit in the lectures of his students and would correct them that they did it wrong, that they didn't get it right to glorify Krishna. He would go through articles which we wrote, and he would, you know, the way he would find out if we wanted to please Krishna was, how many times did we mention Krishna in our article? Was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 50 times Krishna? Very good. That is what he only cared for. We have to get it in our heart. It's for Krishna. There was one other person, and then we will end. Go, Govinda. We will give you a microphone.
The first to be able actually to do it for Krishna, we have to have I need to have a clear idea of who is Krishna, yeah. My Krishna, to whom do I relate to, and often I find that I cannot, okay, intellectually he's in everything, he's the Lord. But what would be your advice? Which is the basic, where to start from to relate to Krishna? I mean,
what's Prabhupada? There was a person who wanted to have initiation from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, okay, let's see if you are ready. And then he asked them a question. Who is Krishna? You know, when the Prabhupada asks you such a question, you and then the devotee said, Krishna is God. Prabhupada said, very good, you can be initiated. it sounds very simple, but this is how you relate in the beginning to Krishna, the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. He is God, the source of everything, omniscient, omnipotent, and these qualities. That is how you start. The Bhagavad Gita is explaining very nicely about Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, I am the origin of both material and spiritual births. So, and then it gives us ways to think of Krishna, and the taste of water, and the ability of man. So beautiful. Beautiful work where Krishna explains how he is, and it's to be studied by devotees every evening. Yes, or even throughout the day or so. You will be all shocked about the simplicity of the answer. It is said you can only start devotional service which is not a shadow, that is an imitation of devotional service, on the basis of sambandha jnan, that is knowledge about Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says in Harinam Chintamani, when we meet a sadhu, we are educated about sambandha jnan, we learn about sambandha jnan, and then our chanting, then we can chant But unless we have Sambandhagyan, it's only a shadow. It's not a real thing. So a shadow will never nourish you. If you eat shadows, it convinces your stomach that this is enough, but it won't work. So if you perform shadow bhakti, it just doesn't nourish you. You will remain hungry. So this knowledge of Sambandhagyan is very important. If you would ask me, Guru Govinda, that you are known in our movement as someone who has written a book on the holy name, what is the one thing you have realized in your life? I would say you have to chant for Krishna in a relationship. That is, and please know, I've tried many, many years to chant names, empty names, and it does not work for long. You want to leave the practice. You're not enlivened and nourished by it. But if you really do it for many days, many rounds, then you just can't do this. But only the moment the names become full, and that is when you try to chant for Krishna, for his pleasure, all of a sudden you don't want to stop. And anyone can do it, Lord Govinda. It's just you have to go systematically to the steps, and when you see you're not doing it for Krishna, he's not there, then you have to correct this. And you have to sleep enough. Because when we are tired, nothing works. Dora, I have talked. Please excuse me that I'm a little bit insistent here. I'm on a mission to convince you. So tomorrow we will learn more. You can only understand the seminar if you at least have also done part two. This was part one. Thank you very much.